بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Deliberate and reward by Allah Ta'ala is for the action. It is not for the experience. Quran Sharif says it so nicely. إن الذين آمنوا وعملوا الصالحات. With iman is righteousness, and righteousness is with action, or righteousness is with the mind. With action we all know, and righteousness in the mind is intention, is the right values. We don't have pride, think good of others, wish well. We don't have the elements of greed, ostentation, jealousy. So Allah Ta'ala has attached the reward for righteousness. إِنَّ الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا وَعَمِلُوا الصَّالِحَاتِ. And righteousness can be with action and deed, and it can be with the mind. He hasn't attached reward with experiences. Many times people get confused. Someone has an experience, so he feels that he is a chip above others. Something very great, fabulous, that I go through these type of experiences. And then there is the other side. The other person tends to feel that really I haven't achieved anything because I don't go through any experience. He's going through so many experiences and he's not going through any experience. Therefore, Ibn Atta Iskandari says it very clearly that your experiences, you only relate to your Shaykh, you don't publicize it. The reason is obvious, that if you're going to be publicizing your experiences, then there is the possibility of self-admiration. See what I go through, what I see happens to me. And also there is the possibility of the next person feeling left out and deprived. You see, he is a novice and he's going through such things, and me, I'm so old and I don't go through anything. So this person can get into ostentation, pride, or self-admiration, and this person can go through some type of depression that I am so old but I don't get anything. So, you know, just relate it to his Shaykh, and his Shaykh will then guide him or correct him as to what to be doing. The general rule that I show, that if there is a good experience, then just say mashallah, but continue. After that, don't stop there, continue. Say mashallah, alhamdulillah, carry on. It's like you are traveling on the road, right? And someone offers you, on the road, he offers you, for example, a packet of chips. So, you say mashallah, jazakallah, and you carry on. Now, you won't stop there and say, see, I got the chips, so I'm so great, and from all the motorists, the chips was given to me. You don't pine over that, you don't boast over that. Happy about it, alhamdulillah, I'm favored, I got a big packet of chips, alhamdulillah, and you continue. Now, if you want to allow yourself to be getting stuck with that, then you want to progress. Right? And you've got a higher goal to achieve. Right? That higher goals may be just left. In pining for these chips here, you will be just left of the higher goals. So these experiences, this is where a lot of people, they go off. Right? There was one person, Bill Garambi. That's the town that he came from, Bill Garambi. So he had some jinnats under control. Now he's got this jinnat under control, and he's telling those jinnat, you know, I just pined to see Shah Abdul Quddus Sahib rahmatullah alayh. So under control now, they went straight away, and the movement is such that in a second they are from one side to the other side, Durban to Johannesburg, 1-2 seconds they are there. So they come there to Shah Abdul Quddus Sahib rahmatullah alayh. He is in his seclusion making zikr or something, and he notices some movement. So he inquired, what's going on? So now we are jinnat. What mission? So now we have to come to receive you. Alright, who sent you? So and so, Bilgarami, he sent us. Why? Well, he's pining to see you, and therefore he asked us to fetch you. He won't hurt you in any way. We'll take you with all respect and we'll return you in good time. So this Shah Abdul Quddus Sahib rahmatullah tells him, from this point you will take instructions from me or from your sender. So under normal circumstance we wouldn't have preferred him to any person. But now that we've come here, we can't bypass you. We'll have to listen to you. So I'm going to fetch your man. Now he's in years, he had trained the jinnat, his control and whatever else he had done to gain that type of mastery over. And in a second he's telling him, right, go and fetch him. Now they felt so overwhelmed that they were there. But you know what, you are under me, take directions from me, and now you reverse the whole thing, going the opposite way. Yes. To anybody else we would have given you preference, but now this Shaykh Abdul Quddus Sahib rahmatullahi, we don't take a chance, we'll have to take you. They took him across. So Shaykh Abdul Quddus Sahib sees him, said, what's your problem? He said, no, I was pining to see you, therefore I instructed them to bring you down. He said, when you respect someone, you hold someone in esteem, is this the way that you treat him? I made a mistake, I didn't understand, I didn't realize, I make Tawbah. Well, he made Tawbah and thereafter he took Biyat and became the Khalifa. But now, in one time it was such that people got their bearings very easily. They understood, alright, these are all experiences, and the experiences must be treated as an experience. You don't go further than the experience. And now we will work just to get that experience. Work and work, struggle and exert ourselves just to go through that experience. Then what? You know that one boy is here from America, from Canada. So I tell him, how do I manage in the winters? Is there any life around outside? Is there any life? Because the temperatures are going minus 40. That means about four or five times your freezer, it will write down. So there is no life at all. No bird, nothing, absolutely nothing. No life. Even the trees are covered of all snow and things. So I tell them, there's no outdoor life, there's no, absolutely no life. And what happens to the fish? So he says to me that there is a layer of ice, a glacier, on the seabed. What happens then after? They are swimming underneath. So that, I suppose, it insulates it for them. It's not so heavy. They can manage under the ice. So then, say, well, you get some people with cracks, right? They go and do fishing in that condition. So I said, why would they go do fishing in that condition? It's so cold, minus 40, and they crack that glacier, and the hook their they will cast their hooks and all that, and they'll pull out fish. So no, just for the experience. So that experience becomes a great thing, just for the experience. It's my character, you will risk your life, but know that experience, you must get that experience. There are some many more, much more important things that you can pine for, you can work towards, much more important things great things that you can work towards. Leave all these great things and go for these type of experiences, really is not adding up. Something short somewhere. Sometimes people go for this type of things. Sometimes an educational experience becomes the objective, you know. So it's not education, it's just an experience. So why I'm studying, why I'm reading? Something new. An experience I'll come through. I'll go through an experience. That's why I'm studying. So, but you will get through something new for what? See? So sometimes that education also becomes just an experience. So therefore you'll find that you'll be studying and you'll be reading and reading, but then there's absolutely no change in the behavior, in the ways, in the mannerisms. So his studying was not so that he could apply the right and abstain from the wrong. That was not the reason. It was just an experience. It's a thrilling story. Let me go with it. Let's see how thrilling this thing is. I say, by what's the difference in looking at that book or that kitab and looking at a video? They also are looking for some experience and some excitement. Here also you're looking for some experience and some excitement. Anything you want. Sometimes the film is designed just to make you cry. Just to make you cry, like a sad story. The way it's done, the way it is motivated and it's designed, just to make you cry. I remember we had some people studying from America, you know. That first batch of Americans, Trinidad and all these people that just came in. So it was about my last year, and these people had come in. Jamaat work, and they were tashkeeled to come and study here. So one of those boys explaining to me that, see, we were so backwards that everything was religion. Christianity, Islam, Hinduism, everything went. So they were so backwards. So then the Jamaat went and hunted them, got their bearings right, gave them a direction to study, right? Then they built masjids and madrasas, etc., etc., after it progressed. But this was, according to that boy, this was their position. If Christmas comes, they're celebrating. Diwali comes, they're celebrating. Eid comes, they're celebrating. All Muslim names. But they all mixed up and confused. So far away from education, from Dini centers, etc. We need to, at this moment, need to think that some of the things that our ancestry had instituted in this country. So when they came in here, then some of the things that they had founded, right, as I see and I hear, is they looked for a masjid and an adjacent maktab, right. And the reason is obvious. The reason is masjid is for the elders to congregate, and the madrasa or the maktab was for the children. So the children, when they are trained and tutored rightly, they will come to the masjid, right? From here, and they coming to the masjid. Right? So this is how the whole community had. This is how they operated, right? So for the adults was the masjid, and for the children was the madrasa. So they're getting an understanding. But what you learn from this is, when you're going to live in an area, then you will give deen a first preference in your life. Now think, alright, we are here. First you will see that you're not isolated. You don't go and move into an area, just run out. Number one, right? Number two, the primary concern is I'm moving into this area. Then when I'm giving my deen a primary, a first preference, then what must I do to sustain my deen? I must do something to sustain my deen. Get around Muslims, do some activity, get the masjid abad, get the children educated, right? But if all these things are not done, then what? What happens? If there's no madrasa, right? Then in due course, there won't be anybody to perform the namaz. There won't be anybody to educate. there won't be anybody to give a bayan, there won't be anybody to give direction, right? Then it just takes one generation, and the second generation is totally lost. Because then they will look around, alright, whatever they could do after that. But after that, now why is madrasa and all that, what's the need for it? Yes, our children need to stand on their feet, so give them some education that they can stand on their feet. The rest is an optional thing. That's how they will begin to think. That's how they will reason. The deen is just an optional thing, and it will happen in course. They'll mix around and they'll come right. So in the next generation will happen, then deen has got no important place in their hearts. When deen got no important place in their hearts, then everything will work. Christianity will work, Judaism will work, Hinduism will work, and Allah Pak make maaf, but you will get Muslims, right? So you see, when you're working with the people, through Jamaat or through Maktabs, you're working with this, you'll find cases coming up, education, very educated people, very educated, coming from good families, but they mixed up, Hindu, Muslim, Christian, all mixed up. And then they say boastfully that let not religion come, don't let religion become an impediment in our love. So the love is first, and deen must just tag along. See, now when you mix up and you find out you're going to one area, second area, third area, and you see what's happening to them. So that deen must be pegged first. You get that anchor first. The whole community must revolve around that. So now there is one central place. The whole community is working. In our childhood, I remember very clearly that in the whole of reunion, there wasn't a single, in fact, reunion or Spingo Hill, right? There wasn't Spingo Hill hadn't started yet. I think Spingo Hill must have started about 65 somewhere, right? But before there was no Spingo Hill. It was just reunion and Spingo Hill. But there won't be one home where the child is not attending the maktab. Every child, boy or girl, under 12, he must be attending the maktab. So that maktab was like a first thing. And that then saved these people's lives. About 1.5 or 2 months ago, one person came to see me in the madrasa. So I looked at him, I knew who it was. I know the name Abdul Rauf. But now, he was in school with me in grade 4, standard 2. That's around 64 somewhere, right? 64. At one side, I made out that this person here, right? But we know now that we were attending maktabs, madras, etc., all together. Now, too, he came in, but he had a kurta, he had a topi or something, and maybe not a full beard, but he had something. But they identified with deen. See, the idea is to identify. So where that identification comes? Now you got a masjid but not functional. Or you don't have a masjid at all. Either a masjid but not functional. Or you don't have a masjid at all. But what happens to the next generation? It's nice to say, no, everybody must work for himself and have his own figure. But then what happens? Tomorrow your child comes up of age, right? See, some of the schools that are operating in around Durban, big schools, right? So some 20 years ago I asked for the head of the school, we invited them here, so they came, the head of the both big schools in Durban, min qaryatayn azim, two big schools, right? So each one would have about 1,500 something students. So I addressed them, I said, see, I've got no interest in your school. And by the grace of Allah Ta'ala, I don't have intentions to send my children, my great-grandchildren to your school. So there's no intention, no interest. But my concern is now, see, the future nobody knows. What the future holds for me, what the future holds for you, I don't know. Right. These children are growing up, right? Our children are also growing up. Right? When they're growing up, then there's going to be interaction. then there's going to be marriages, right? Now, if it is that in these schools there is a little bit of a free atmosphere, boys, girls, intermingling, etc., so they're growing up with that mindset. Now, we don't know the future. We don't know the future. Children are growing up, there's interaction, and there's marriages across. They brought up in a different mindset, and here they brought up in a different mindset. I say, can you envisage problems or not? We are brought up differently, and they are brought up totally differently. They see things differently, they view things differently, and here we are seeing things differently, we are viewing things differently. Will you have problems or not? Will you have hiccups? Will you have hurdles or not? So they understood, alhamdulillah. Alright, they did intend, or will try and rectify after that. Stop these things here, you know, the mixed education, have separate education for both boys and girls, have it separate completely. Right? But they didn't understand. So it's so important for the elders of that community to try and understand, alright, that's now, these children will be adults, and we haven't made any proper arrangements for them. Right? What's going to happen to the next generation? See, this concern, this fear. Then, when the child is showing a haughtiness, he's showing attitude, or he's doing things totally against Deen and Islam, you want to know, hey, why is the child behaving like this? He grew up in that environment. There were no scruples. He wasn't supervised in any way in Deen. So he's behaving like that. You must expect that type of behavior because he was brought up in that way. Now, you get an isolated case in all this. You can't go by an isolated case. One affluent area in Durban, right? Some sheer case, there's one, two cases. You can't go by that isolated cases. So, both the father and the mother, both doctors. Not only doctors, but they're specialist type. Specializing. So they want the child also to come and grow up like that. That child somehow, he got hooked to the maktab. But he's creating a scene in the madrasa, he's not behaving. So obviously the teacher will complain to the inspector. Inspector is more Ismail. So they come and complain to him, so when Ismail's work is a lot of damage control, patawa the person says, never mind, this is the work. He won't say, just take the child out. So a lot of damage controls, it makes up and all that. Anyway, for that 1 year, they kept on complaining, Abba kept on complaining, and he had said the same thing, just bear with us, right? Now they puzzled now what to do. Now came the holidays. After the holidays, the mother came to complain to the madrasa. What have you people done to my child? Before Fajr is coming and knocking at the door. Now the whole house have to perform the namaz, because this child says no. They have a kitab reading session in the madrasa, and they're showing the importance of namaz. So before Fajr, the child is knocking at the door and is getting us all for namaz. What should I have done to my child? The child came to madrasa. He knows Surah Yasin, Tabarak, Alif Lam, Tanzeel. He can't read the Quran Sharif properly still, but he knows it. How you learned it? No, I got fikr. So before sleeping, I put the tape on. I learned all these things. I happened to be there to do one nikah in the same masjid. So the child sat next to me. He was about 16 or something. He got a turban, first serve. But now this is an isolated case. We can't work with an isolated case. We have to work for the whole community. See that it's growing. There's a shape given to it. The importance. See how important it is. I say for 10 years also, if there's a lockdown, the maktab must carry on like normal. In fact, they must double the work. That's what my understanding. It's so important. It's your lifeline. One case there was, they're showing you isolated cases, right? But I'm showing you that you don't go by these isolated cases. So, there was a divorce case, right? Now, the mother is perturbed in that anxiety, she was married to a Christian. Whatever. Now that she got married to a Christian, both the husband and the wife very seriously ill. They're going to the temple to bust some coconuts, nothing happening. Went to the church to ring some bells, nothing happening there. Tried everything, not working. This is not working, the coconuts are not working, the bells are not working. They give me the tithes and 10% of the salary, nothing also not working. The sickness is just progressing. So the child asked the mother, "Ma, you have tried everything, but you know, when we were small, right, father sent us to the maktab. The father was a Muslim. Father sent us to the maktab. We learned some things. What we learned? Surah Fatiha, Qul Huwallah, Qul Huwallah. Let's read those things." So they read, and the mother just stood up. When she was strapped to the bed, can't move now, she just got up. Energetic, she just got up. So we tried everything. We tried the money, we tried the doctors, we tried temples, we tried church, we tried everything. Nothing worked out. Yeah, just read Kulas Birbil Falak, Kulas Birbil Nas one time, Surah Fatiha, and then immediately the mother got up. Now the mother is telling the father, "See, that is a non-Muslim, but we tried everything, everything failed us, everything betrayed us. The thing that helped us was the Quran Sharif." Right? So now they come to the Mulana, "Please accept us for Islam." Mother, she said the kalima again, father said the kalima again, but I'm saying this is an isolated case. I'm not saying that it's a feather in the cap for the maktab, I'm showing that it's an isolated case. Now this case has come to us. Right? But now, what do we do? What do you do? See the importance of this. You may say, "No, everybody can go through self-studies and all that, and right, it's not a solution. That self-study is not a solution. You come across one ayat of the Quran, you know, study the Quran Sharif, study hadith, and then obviously if you're studying yourself, you're going to take an interpretation of your own. Right? And when you're going to take an interpretation of your own, that has got the possibility of confusing you, complicating things. Because the Quran Sharif has got two types of ayat. Hazrat Ji Ramadhan should say, see, one ayat is for you to take a lesson, for you to be conscientized of Jannat and Jahannam, for you to know the oneness of a creator. That's one type of ayat, right? So for this type of ayat, the Quran actually says, وَلَقَدْ يَسَّرْنَا الْقُرْآنَ لِذِكْرِ فَهَلْ مِنْ مُدَّكِرِ. We have simplified the Quran Sharif for any person that wants to reflect. Anyone wants to have a right understanding, right? So we have simplified. But matters pertaining to Tawheed, matters pertaining to Qiyamat, Jannat and Jahannam, these ayats are very clear. You won't be confused with this ayat in any way, inshallah, right? So, where the Quran Sharif says, وَلَقَدْ يَسَّرْنَا الْقُرْآنَ لِذِكْرِ, the Quran Sharif has been simplified. It's simplified for you to be able to reflect. Right? Now, why is the ayats of reflection important? It's because the normal person needs something to drive him, right? So what's going to drive him? Things that will drive him is the talk of Jannat, Jahannam, Qiyamat, right? That's a reality, it's going to happen, you're going to come through it, right? So what preparations have we made? So that's the thing that's going to motivate him, it's going to drive him. So these ayats are not difficult to understand. The person has a clear mind. One is a person who's got a crooked mind, right? And that crooked mind, no matter what you explain, he will look at it, and he will look at it wrong. Why? Not because it's wrong, but his mind is crooked. He can't see right. He can't see things and he can't understand things in perspective. So the right is presented to him, but he doesn't have the common sense. See, for everything you have to give illustrations for us to understand. Because I say, in this day of technology, really we become very thick, very, very thick, with the technology all around. So it's so difficult for the common sense to permeate your mind, right? In the old days, there used to be a Bharat. Bharat means like a wedding procession. Now, you are from Spingo, and perhaps the girl is from, say from Berlam Sharif, right? Right. So there's no motor cars, no trains. Sort of 200, 300 years ago. So what you will do? You will, a whole Jamaat will go, 40, 50 people, horses, whatever, with their carts, and they'll be moving to fetch the bride. The bride is now in Berlam now, say 45 kilometers away, right? So now, as they're going now, so the groom doesn't have a proper rumal, you see. You must show now, it's a groom, he must be groomed up. That's why they call him groom, he must be groomed up. Not groomed up then, how will it look? So he didn't have a proper rumal to groom himself. One person had that silken rumal, very expensive, very, very nice looking. Alright, I will borrow you my rumal, at least you'll have some look. So now, as they're traveling now, they have to go to Verlam, so they'll have to move to the passing Clearwood or something. So, the people know it's a Bharat, a wedding party. So they ask, kiska Bharat hai? Whose wedding is this? And strangely, right, you may have seen the boy all your life, but on the wedding day you would have seen him. It may be your sister that is married, getting married. You've seen her right through the... But that day you want to see. So Allah Pak put a little bit of a different nur. But that day you want to see. So just say, kiska barat hai? So the man says, see, ye barat, ye shadi to iska hai, ye rumal mera hai. So it's his wedding, but that scarf is mine, you see. See this, people become very thick. They can't understand common sense. That's why I say that everything has to be broken down, simplified. Well, I start all this Tasheel series now, he calls it now. Everything has to be Tasheeled. Everything must be simplified. So now as they're moving again, so they asked him, but why did you have to say that Rumal belongs to you? Why did you have to say that? Oh, he said, oh, I stumbled, I'll keep that in mind in future, inshallah. So as they move along, they're passing Durban somewhere, ye kiski barat hai? So he says, see, ye barat to fala saab ki hai, lekin ye rumal to mera nahi hai. Nahin, rumal uska nahi hai. What? Ye fala ki barat hai, rumal uska nahi hai. He's wedding, but that rumal doesn't belong to him. Now they shouted him again, by why do you have to say all these stories? You see, I'm showing how thick they are. And you may not understand, but if you work with people, you understand they're very thick. They can't understand simple things. That's why I say the importance of teaching them elementary Islamic education. They have to be spoon-fed and give them, let them do it the practical, the wuzu, everything, let them do it practically. Now they pass in the third town, right, perhaps they go to now visible, right? Ye kiska barat hai? Barat to fala ka hai, lekin rumal ka to poocho hi mat. Don't even ask about the rumal. See, hum to tang aage, pahe tum apne rumal rehlo wapas. See, they so thick. So now, that's why they have to be taught one-on-one. Things about Qiyamah, etc., it's easy to digest. Jahannam, Jannat. So that's why the Quran Sharif says, وَلَقَدْ يَسَّرْنَا الْقُرْآنَ. Then you get the second type of verses. That verses is about laws, right? Commands, injunctions, prohibitions, right? So it's a different class of laws. When it's a different class of laws, then you need a different level of intellect. For example, the Quran Sharif will say, Waddama, right? Now, then you need to have an additional type of an intellect, because the Quran Sharif is prohibiting the consuming of blood. But then someone can well come up and say, but what about a liver? Liver is blood. A spleen is blood, what? So now, when he's got that additional understanding, then he can come to the right conclusions. but he's just looking at the Quran Sharif translation straight and he wants to come to the right conclusion. Is it possible? See? So you see this, some things are at a level where everybody can understand. Some things are at an advanced level. For that advanced level, you have to refer to someone that is advanced. You know? That, I mean, it's common sense, right? You see, someone has got a headache, right? So, it's common knowledge, got a headache, or I give him an aspirin, give him a Desperin, and sort him out, right? But it's something serious now. Now, I ask you, can you just administer the medication yourself? Now you have to go to a doctor, a specialist, or right, these are the symptoms, this is what he's... So, in life too, one you can say, no, the medication is a simple thing. But if it is a complicated thing, then can you treat it so simply? I say, no, I can administer it myself. Can't. So like in life also, you have a primary level and you have an advanced level. The Quran Sharif also has got a primary level for everybody to understand. And one is, you want an advanced level, someone that is advanced, you will refer to him. Allah Baktawfiq Nasib.